Daniel, good to see you this morning.
How are you, Dr. Paul?
I'm doing well, good. And I'll tell you what, I wish the country was doing a little bit better. Because it's hard to keep up on which country is the biggest threat to us, which country is going to invade us. And so there's so many that are ganging up on us that we have to counterattack before we're attacked.
That's right.
And, of course, we've talked a lot about Korea, but, you know, the Middle East has been going on for a long time. We have Ukraine to worry about, Libya at times. But this time it's getting closer to home, so they're getting very, very worried. As Trump said, it's very, very close, and that is Venezuela, so we better be prepared. And this has been going on. We've been involved in Venezuela for a few years, maybe a few decades. Of course, we've been involved in South and Central America for 150 years in hundreds of different episodes. So this is more of the same. But this is a little bit more risky on what's going on because Trump has literally threatened a military operation. And it would have been easy to just blow it off as more bluster. Hopefully that is correct. Why should we be involved? But then yesterday, Pompeo was on Fox News, Sunday News, and he had a different spin on this. He's found a real reason to get down there and take care of Maduro, you know, and get rid of his regime because the Russians are there.
Oh, no.
The Iranians are there. Hezbollah is there. I mean, they've taken over. And remember the Monroe Doctrine. So we have to go in there because it's getting to be a very dangerous situation. Well, I don't know whether they needed that, but it looks like they're looking for the ammunition to do something serious, and who knows when or why. And the why is a big question, as if Venezuela is a threat to our national security. But anyway, it's a big issue, and they're talking about it. And in this day and age, you can't ever tell, you know, whether the bombs are going to be dropped or whether we're going to send in special forces or just what we're doing. We've already spent, you know, a lot of money on trying to take that country over. The more we spend, the more solidified their dictators have become.
You know, there's something very alarming when you see President Trump. He's on the golf course in New Jersey, which, as you wrote a while ago, that's fine. He should stay on the golf course. But here he is on the golf course in his golf clothes. And, you know, the issue of Venezuela comes up. And he just says, well, you know, there's a military option we're looking at. It's so casually thrown out, just so willy-nilly, you know, that, oh, this is, you know, this is what we're looking at. It's one of the first things that he says. But instead of, as you wrote today, the Venezuelans said, this is crazy, what are you talking about? They tried to call him up to clarify it. He wouldn't take their phone call. But then Pompeo backs it up. And here's a guy, he sees threats everywhere. He sees enemies everywhere. He believes his own president was put into power by Russia, you know. And so he comes through and he says, this is an interesting quote from his appearance. Because this, I think, is explicitly talking about the U.S. desire for regime change. He backed up Trump's comments. They were to give, quote, to give the Venezuelan people hope and an opportunity to create a situation where democracy can be restored. That sounds like a familiar kind of phraseology.
Yeah, you know, I happened to spot that same quote, and I thought it was telling, you know, on just their attitude. They're our American partners down there, and we're going to do this. Then my thoughts when he started talking about, installing democracy in that country, I said, yeah, like Iraq. You know, they have a great democracy going there. And everything we touch with that so-called good intentions usually helps the enemies. And when we get involved too often, we end up with quagmire, you know, perpetual war, for perpetual peace. People say, well, that's terrible. We shouldn't do that. We should win these wars much quicker.
Yeah.
But who knows who benefits from these long, drawn-out war? The war industry. You know, the weapons industries, their stocks go up. So it's a perpetual thing. But Trump, one of these days, with his threats, he's being challenged. And it's sort of lucky that he doesn't go through with everything he says. But one of these days, he might just decide that he's going to lose credibility about, you know, using military action here and there. So it remains to be a dangerous situation because Republicans and Democrats endorse the principle that it is our moral obligation to spread Americans' exceptionalism and our democratic system. I wish they'd think and be more concerned about the undermining of our system here at home and the undermining of our liberties here at home. That would be a lot more positive spending of energy and money than to go and tell other people how they should live.
Certainly, a growing element of the left, along with the media, is explicitly encouraging the president to pursue war. Look, the only time he ever caught a break from the media is when he lobbed these absurd missiles into Syria on what, you know, you said at the time and has been proven to be a false flag event. So the only time he ever gets them off his back is when he shoots off missiles. It makes you worry that, you know, he's going to carry through with some of these threats just to change the subject.
You know, and we just spoke about this. I see it as so much hypocrisy about us going in there and doing good. And then coming up with these accusations of these other countries interfering, you know, in the internal affairs of Venezuela. And it was the precise thing in 2002 that we actually got Chavez to back off away, but it didn't work. It seems that when we get involved, and we've mentioned this about other countries, especially in Iran, that once we get in there and foment trouble, it unifies the people. So we never got rid of Castro that way. Oh, yeah, we're going to punish the Cuban people, and now we're going to get mad at Castro and throw them out. Well, maybe they'll get mad at us. So that's what happens down there. So even the bad guys get support because they have a nationalistic spirit. They want to solve their own problems. But this idea that all we'll do is arrive there with the tanks or whatever and throw out a dictator and all of a sudden it's going to be peaceful. No, then we'll own it. And our governments, many governments, Republican and Democrat, get very annoyed when other countries don't obey us, you know, and roll over and do exactly as we tell them. And we've tried a lot of things, you know, all these sanctions, that hasn't worked. Now we have somebody threatening military operations, and that's not going to work. So it's part of a mentality that I think Trump is just more blunt on it. It's always been existence. You know, even back to Eisenhower's day, Eisenhower was seen as somebody who just didn't pay any attention. But behind the scenes, he was very much in charge of what was happening. But I think Trump is almost the opposite of that. He is very authoritarian, and like you say, he expresses himself on the golf course as if it were policy.
Yeah.
And but, you know, he's an important figure, and that could get the American people into serious trouble.
Yeah, I think the Pentagon, after he made that statement, said, "Well, we don't know anything about this. What's this all about?" But you know, there is a tendency. You know, they've had a centrally planned economy in Venezuela since Chavez was elected in '99, and of course, as history shows us, this is not the most successful way to govern your country. It stifles free enterprise. It stifles, free markets, and it ends in failure. It always ends in failure. But there's a tendency, even among some libertarians, to blame the whole thing on quote-unquote socialism. But in fact, you have to look at the other factors as well. And one of them is the U.S. meddling. You know, and I noticed there was a really fascinating expose that The Intercept, which is Greenwald's publication, put out earlier this week. And they discovered that some libertarian organizations like Atlas were taking a bunch of money from the U.S. government to go down in Venezuela and undermine the government there in hoping for a regime change. And, you know, I would think, you know, the immediate reaction even among some libertarians is to say, well, that's good. They should get a free market. You know, if this is what it takes, that's okay. But they don't realize, since when is the U.S. interested in free markets? You know, when are they interested in personal liberties? You know, there are enemies here at home for protecting civil liberties, for free markets. So what makes you think that their real goal in Venezuela is liberties and markets?
And what's the other half of the equation? You know, if they're going to send some help to a country like that, don't they first have to use force to take it from the innocent American working person? They steal the money. They steal the money, and then they're going to go down and do good. Yeah. And that's one of the obstacles that we always have is, you know, the motivations, the wonderful motivations of American exceptionalism. You can't be opposed to that or you're unpatriotic. So they can use that tool. And the other thing that they can use, the best way to promote this type of a policy is to be able to demonize. And, of course, Chavez was a good person to demonize. And right now it's easy to do it and say, well, you know, they're communists and all these things, which they probably are, you know, if infiltrated. But I don't think the average person, you know, in Venezuela, if they had a chance for the prosperity that freedom brings, it wouldn't take a whole lot to convert them to that. It's just not been offered to them. And we have been involved in that area of the world for a long, long time. And we're always interfering in their self-determination. Think about, you know, how we create the country of Panama. And they said, oh, yeah, but that's good. We got a good canal out of that, as if it would have never happened any other way, yeah. You know. So it's a situation that is going to be with us for a while, obviously.
And this is, I think, the essence of non-interventionism that people don't understand. You know, the idea is for them to get to a place that's like this, but they have to get to that on their own. They can't be forced. They can't be bribed. They can't be, you know, at the end of a shotgun, be told this is the correct system. As you've always said, the best thing for us to do is to provide the best example of the benefits and the bounty of a real free market system.
And right now that's become a difficult job, you know, because we don't follow the free market. And we've distorted things so badly with being able to issue the reserve currency of the world and distort all economic systems and look at the debt system that we have. So it's really pretty hard to brag and say, yeah, we're going to leave you alone. We're not going to use our military might and no more sanctions. Just look at what we do and how wonderful it is, because who knows what our economy is going to be like in a year from now, and who will admit and recognize the serious conditions of a lot of our people in this country today that are impoverished, and all that's being offered to them is coming from the far left, and that is what we need is socialism. Yeah. We need more force and violence and control of the economy in order to take from one group to give to another. And it's easy to attack the rich. We should tax the rich. But that is fine if the rich got there because they're partners with government, partners in some sinister way, or partner in the way that they get contracts from the government and protection from the government, or build weapons for the government. You know, that's a different story. And that's not as easy thing for the average person to understand, that it isn't wealth per se. It's ill-gotten wealth that is bad, and yeah. We should do something about that. But that should not be present in a libertarian society, because you reject the use of force, and they're not allowed to do this. And it means that we have to evaluate eventually the benefits of government. Is the government really the instrument that's going to provide the best protection? So far, governments have done a lousy yeah. job. The more trouble you have, the bigger the government gets. Right now, people think that we have to add on to government and ignore deficits, and someday they have to wake up and say, you know, if you want peace and prosperity, it comes in a different fashion. It means you give more responsibility and more control to the people outside of the authoritarianism that exists with government. That's where I see the big problem.
And, you know, just to show, as you've always said, that war is a bipartisan issue, you know, Trump is ratcheting things up. But you can't neglect the idea that sanctions are a form of warfare. And here's the great Obama. 2011, sanctions on their oil industry. 2013, sanctions on their state weapons manufacturer. 2014, sanctions on government officials. 2015, an executive order stating that Venezuela was an unusual and extraordinary threat to the United States. And more sanctions. So it just goes on and on and on and on.
You know, I just wonder whether what Pompeo did was part of a strategy. You wonder whether he was walking in there. He knew the subject would come up and he would have to be tough, or whether he's shooting from the hip like Trump does too. But this whole idea that this is part of policy, just doesn't make a whole lot of sense unless they're serious about it. And, the other thing that bothers me about this whole thing is when somebody in the press asked Trump, well, you're talking about military operation doing something in Venezuela. And they said, essentially, what do you have in mind? Oh, that's secret. We can't tell you that. We don't want to give away our secrets. Well, what about the right of the American people to know the secrets of how they go to war? It's just assume that they can go to war and use military power anytime they want and say, well, it has to be secret. But this is a big problem of the assumption that the governments can do this willy-nilly.
Yeah, absolutely. And if I could do something different for my final thoughts, if you don't mind, a little update on the conference.
We've been
working hard all the weekend. We just had to talk about it. We've got such an exciting thing that's come together, which is our Whistleblowers Roundtable. And this is going to be an historic gathering of whistleblowers. We've worked for about a year and a half on having whistleblowers on the show and talking about the importance of what they do, shining the light on government misdeeds. We're getting a big, important group of them together, including, for example, Thomas Drake, who was the inspiration to Ed Snowden to blow the whistle. This is going to be a very, very exciting, only just a part of our conference, but a really exciting part of the conference. And so I hope people will go and find out more about the conference, ronpaulinstitute.org/conference. You can get all the information, get your tickets. But this is shaping up to be really an event for the ages.
I agree with you, and that is why I'm going to be there.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
That's good. No, and I look forward to being there, and I look forward to meeting a lot of people there who are like-minded and who would like to see a policy change which is designed to promote peace and prosperity, which is rare these days. But it's not rare among the people, and that is why we have had enthusiasm for this. This is only our second year that we're going to be doing this, and we expect to sell out crowd like we did last year. So I think it's something very, very worthwhile and very productive, because even after the conference, the people come, they're excited and all, but then it continues. There'll be a lot of articles written and videos made and a continuation of this educational activity. But I do hope that you'll consider seriously about coming, and I'm looking forward to it. And I think we will continue our discussion as we do here on a daily basis, talking about a non-interventionist foreign policy as being the main vehicle for seeking peace and prosperity. Thank you very much for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.